This is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, a corruption scandal hits football's governing body, FIFA. The UN seeks new protection of journalists in conflict zones.
In the world, more than 90% of the crimes against journalists are never prosecuted, are never punished.
Damaged robots overcome breakdowns on their own. We'll also hear about what's new in country music. These and other stories just ahead. I'm Ray Kugel. Football's world governing body, FIFA, is now playing defense after authorities in Zurich, Switzerland, arrested seven of its officials Wednesday, pending extradition to the United States. U.S. authorities are carrying out more search warrants in Miami, Florida, and the Justice Department says another four individuals and two corporate defendants have pleaded guilty in the case. The U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch says lies, corruption, and bribery have plagued football's governing body, FIFA, for over two decades. Attorney General Lynch spoke at a news conference Wednesday in New York as federal charges were unveiled against 14 people in a sweeping investigation of FIFA.
These individuals, through these organizations, engaged in bribery to decide who would televise games, where the games would be held, and who would run the organization overseeing organized soccer worldwide.
She called the allegations rampant, systemic, and deep-rooted corruption that profoundly harmed a multitude of victims. The U.S. indictment includes 47 counts against current and former top officials, covering charges of racketeering, wire fraud, and money laundering in a scheme that prosecutors say involves sports media executives paying or agreeing to pay millions of dollars in exchange for marketing rights to tournaments. Swiss authorities are conducting a separate investigation into allegations connected to the awarding of the 2018 and 2022 World Cups. Chris Eaton is the executive director of Sports Integrity at the International Institute for Sports Security in Doha, Qatar. VOA's Jeffrey Young spoke with him about the arrests.
The U.S. jurisdiction has a great deal of strength in this area because it's able to track the movement of monies, particularly U.S. dollars, in any transaction around the world, which gives them jurisdiction. This is one of the unique issues of international jurisdiction that the U.S. enjoys. And we're very pleased to see, finally, that these allegations are in some way taken to the right judicial area so we can see the truth finally come out.
In the awarding of the 2022 World Cup to Qatar, there was a swirl of controversy and allegations that a very wealthy Qatari spent some $65 million of his own money rounding up the votes to ensure that his country, Qatar, would indeed land the cup in 22. Is there any connection to that incident to what is going on here with the Swiss authorities and the Department of Justice?
Well, there isn't any obvious connection yet. Maybe there is when this investigation is only early in the U.S., and I'm sure that it's the beginning of the charges that will come out of their investigation. But the Swiss authorities announced themselves an investigation into both the 2018 and 2022 bids and allegations of corrupt payments to some people. So we finally now have some judicial and law enforcement action where we'll see the truth come rather than allegations only in the media and the sorts of things that have happened in the past, which is trial by media. We now need to see, and good to see, trial by real judicial competence.
You say that this has been going back some time. Give me a little bit of a timeline. In the action that's just taken place, how far back are authorities looking in compiling the charges against both the FIFA officials and the former FIFA officials and also the sports marketing executives? What's the timeline on this?
I understand it goes back to the early 1990s, but perhaps the larger amounts are in the 2000s and beyond. So we're looking about a 20-year timeline really here, and that's a shocking timeline, quite frankly, to be laid dormant for so long and waiting for some sort of legal action like this in a jurisdiction like the USA.
I notice with some interest that this coming Friday, Sepp Blatter, who is the head of FIFA, is planning to run for the presidency again. This is his fifth term. An amazing coincidence? What is this?
You mean the timing of the arrests? No, I don't think so. I think the fact is that the The U.S. authorities need to find a way in which they have addressed the full numbers of people that were associated with FIFA that were suspect, and they want to investigate and to take legal action against. Today, they are all in Switzerland, in the one location. It made logical sense for them to take the action they took. The timing is irrelevant, really. The fact is that they're all in the same place at the same time.
How does this action, both by the U.S. Department of Justice and Swiss authorities, how does this speak to the integrity of FIFA as a sport organization?
And more importantly, what it speaks about is this very opaque and shadowy organization. Its structure is just not suitable in the international business environment of today. FIFA is a very old, antiquated structure, and it's creaking under its own opaque weight. Now, we've had so many scandals over the last 10 years at FIFA. It's really time for a complete reformation of the organization to make it more in tune with the realities of business competence today.
Chris Eaton, Executive Director of Sport Integrity at the International Institute for Sport Security in Doha, Qatar, speaking with VOA's Jeffrey Young. Social media is reacting to the FIFA arrests. Our own VOA audience is commenting, as we hear from Michael Lippin.
Thanks, Ray. FIFA was one of the most talked about topics on Twitter worldwide on Wednesday. According to analytics website Topsy, the acronym FIFA was tweeted at least 900,000 times in the past day in all languages. Typically, FIFA is a widely tweeted topic, which is understandable given that it supervises the world's most popular sport. In the month before the Zurich arrests, Topsy shows that FIFA was tweeted about 50,000 to 90,000 times a day. On Wednesday, interest surged to the point where FIFA was being tweeted about 38,000 times an hour, or 10 times per second. The FIFA scandal also has generated a new hashtag, FIFAGate. That's a play on the U.S. political scandal known as Watergate from the 1970s. Hashtag FIFAGate was used at least 25,000 times on Wednesday. One particular tweet that resonated online was from Piers Morgan, a British journalist and former talk show host on U.S. TV network CNN. Morgan had some fun at FIFA's expense, writing a mock headline about the seven FIFA officials detained in Zurich. His tweet read, "Breaking: Swiss police confirm that when arrested, all seven FIFA officials threw themselves on the ground and pretended to be injured." Now, we have no idea of what exactly happened when those officials were detained in their hotel rooms early Wednesday, and we also haven't yet heard any responses from them to the criminal charges they now face. By the way, Morgan also tweeted another hashtag that saw a jump in usage on Wednesday, Bladder Out. That hashtag was tweeted about 13,000 times on Wednesday, a sign of the global pressure that the FIFA chief is facing to resign. Back to you, Ray.
Thanks, Michael. You can follow him on Twitter. His handle is at Michael_Lippin. That's L-I-P-I-N. Social media's impact is not only giving people a chance to react instantaneously to the day's events, it is also changing the way police departments and other public agencies do business. But they are also raising questions, as VOA's Michael Sullivan explains.
At the Los Angeles public transit system known as LA Metro, workers monitor banks of video screens showing buses on their routes and busy intersections looking for delays or other signs of trouble. The system uses information from its cameras and sensors and will soon use data from the social media application Waze, sent by drivers who note real-time traffic conditions. Kelly Fogel of LA Metro says the transit system must have up-to-date information.
Data is king. So to have a lot of data is very important. We have a lot of infrastructure data. What crowdsourcing and apps like Waze allow us to do is to fill in the gaps.
Waze, owned by Google, has partnered with cities from Rio to Jakarta to better understand urban traffic patterns. Drivers like Frida Sidoroff of Los Angeles rely on Google Maps and other navigation apps to get through the traffic.
It is so useful. I use it every day.
The California Department of Transportation, known as Caltrans, also communicates with drivers through message signs on freeways, its highway mapping site called QuickMap, and social media sites like Twitter. Caltrans spokesman Patrick Chandler says traffic managers see millions of trips each day.
We're still basically able to move a lot of those people, but the system is old. It's 60, 70 years old. And so we try different things to maximize capacity beyond just building new freeways or interchanges or widening the freeways. We try different ways to inform travelers of the conditions that are ahead of them.
Police departments are using social media to communicate with the public.
Resign from office! Everybody to resign from office today!
But following protests in many American cities over the deaths of African Americans at the hands of police and the killing of several officers in separate incidents, some police are worried that applications like Waze that identify police locations can pose a danger to officers. Los Angeles Police Chief Charlie Beck expressed his concern to Google in December. A Google spokeswoman did not respond directly to his concern, saying only that the company works with police to keep officers and citizens safer. Meanwhile, civil liberties groups are using their social apps to encourage citizens to monitor police, including applications being distributed in New York and California. These developments underscore the increasing importance of social media for the public, police, and other public agencies to communicate and gather information. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
The journalism profession is growing more dangerous. The number of deaths and kidnappings of media professionals continues to climb. The figures are alarming. The UN Security Council hopes to do something about it. It unanimously adopted a resolution Wednesday on the protection of journalists in conflict zones. VOA's Margaret Bashir has details.
Reporters Without Borders says 66 journalists were killed last year and 25 more have died since January. In the last decade, 700 media workers have been killed in the field or because of their profession. The resolution condemns such attacks and warns parties to conflicts, including governments and armed groups, that they should take all reasonable steps to protect journalists. It also calls for the immediate and unconditional release of reporters who are hostages in conflict zones. Christophe Delois of Reporters Without Borders said Iraq and Syria have become two of the most dangerous places for journalists to work, with 45 killed in Syria since that conflict started in 2011, and at least 15 killed in Iraq since 2013. He said ensuring accountability is key to preventing future attacks.
In the world, more than 90% of the crimes against journalists are never prosecuted. Are never punished. It's like an encouragement for all those who commit crimes against journalists. So if we want to protect journalists, we have to fight impunity.
Delois said attacks on journalists in conflict zones could be considered war crimes and should be referred to the International Criminal Court. U.S. Ambassador Samantha Power, herself a former journalist, said even in countries at peace, erosions on press freedoms and the harassment and intimidation of reporters often signal a crackdown on civil, political, and human rights. She gave as an example the current political turmoil in Burundi, where the military challenged President Pierre Nkurunziza's decision to seek what is widely seen as an unconstitutional third term in power.
Since the unlawful attempt to seize power was quashed, several independent journalists report being told that they are on a list of people to be arrested, and many more reportedly have been threatened with death, torture, and disappearance, leading them to go into hiding.
She said regimes like the one of Bashar al-Assad in Syria and armed groups such as the self-proclaimed Islamic State target journalists because they do not want people to see them for what they really are. As the Security Council met, the Committee to Protect Journalists issued a statement condemning the murder of a Brazilian radio reporter whose tortured body was found Saturday, one day after he was reported kidnapped by gunmen in the country's northeast. It was the second murder of a Brazilian journalist in less than a week. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
Top nuclear negotiators in the United States, South Korea, and Japan agreed in a meeting Wednesday they need to increase pressure and sanctions against North Korea while continuing diplomatic efforts to address the country's nuclear weapons program. here are the latest news headlines. I'm Victor Beatty. The world of football has been rocked by a corruption and bribery scandal that is said to extend back more than 20 years and involve current and former officials of the world governing body, FIFA. U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch alleged Wednesday that 14 individuals used their positions to solicit bribes from sports marketers in exchange for commercial rights to soccer tournaments. In Burundi, demonstrators were back in the streets Wednesday demanding that President Pierre Nkurunziza withdraw from seeking a third term in next month's scheduled election. In New York, the president of the UN Security Council said the predominant opinion among council members is that Burundi's election should be postponed. Meanwhile, the opposition says it's impossible to hold free and fair parliamentary elections scheduled next week. That's the latest world news. I'm Victor Beatty. Robots break down and keep on working. Stay with us.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Hi, I'm Larry London, and I'm the host of Border Crossings, inviting you to join me for one of the best hours of request music possible on the radio. We've got all your favorite songs by your favorite singers. You tell us what to play. It's requests and dedications, and it happens every weekday right here on The Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. When a dog loses a leg, the animal eventually figures out the best way to get around on three legs. Scientists have developed robots that do much the same thing. Artificial intelligence is used to adapt and overcome damage that could otherwise leave them hobbled. Here's VOA's Jessica Berman.
Robots are everywhere. They build cars, play chess, can clean your house, and may someday drive your car. Beyond this planet, rovers named Spirit and Opportunity were sent to Mars on a continuing mission of exploration. They also play vital roles in natural disasters. According to University of Wyoming computer scientist Jeff Kloon with the Evolving Artificial Intelligence Lab, roving robots are deployed in search and rescue operations following an earthquake and may someday be used to sort through the wreckage of a nuclear accident like the one at Fukushima, Japan.
The problem is that all of those types of situations and environments are extremely unpredictable and hostile, and so it's very likely that robots and humans in those situations become damaged. And when seconds count and lives are on the line, we definitely do not want robots to give up at the first sign of injury. We want them to be able to adapt and deal with any damage and injury they suffer to continue to perform their mission until they can be brought back in to be repaired.
With this idea of adaptation in mind, Kloon and colleagues in France have added one more function to the skill set of robots operating under potentially harsh conditions. In an article detailing their work in the journal Nature, Kloon and French designers describe how they programmed a hexapod robot with six legs and a robotic arm to learn how to overcome injury.
Once they become damaged, they use those intuitions and that knowledge of how their body works to basically come up with hypotheses, like a scientist almost, saying, oh, I think this might work. Oh, no, that didn't work. Let me try something completely different. Oh, that doesn't work either. Let me try this third thing. Ah, that works fine despite the damage. Now let me go about my business.
Kloon says robots are programmed with a childlike curiosity, and they use that primitive algorithm to figure out how to adapt to injury. The entire trial and error process takes about a minute for the robots to figure out how to overcome damage. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
Coming up, we'll hear about the latest in country music.
I'm Todd Grossons, and here's what's new on The Voice of America. It consists of 1.5 billion pixels and requires 4.3 gigabytes of disk space. NASA says it's the largest picture ever taken, involving 411 separate images, all combined to show us a spectacular panoramic view of the Andromeda Galaxy, 2 million light years away from Earth. The Hubble telescope captured all these images at a resolution comparable to photographing individual grains of sand on a beach. The Andromeda Galaxy, with hundreds of billions of stars, is just one of more than 100 billion galaxies in a universe so big, well, we humans simply can't process that kind of size. Go to NASA.gov and search for Andromeda if you really want an up-close and personal look at our closest galactic neighbor, courtesy of the gift that keeps on giving, the Hubble Space Telescope. For VOA's What's New, I'm Todd Grosshans.
Britain's Queen Elizabeth made a formal speech before Parliament Wednesday, a yearly tradition, to lay out the agenda for the government, this one conservative. The Queen, appearing in full regalia, read a speech outlining the goals of Prime Minister David Cameron's Conservative Party. They include a promised referendum on European Union membership. The speech also offered promises to cap welfare benefits and freeze some taxes for 5 years. A pair of country music veterans returned to the studio, Tragedy at a Trace Atkins Show, and Luke Bryan is kicking the dust up on tour. Here's VOA's David Byrd and Nikki Strong in the studio to talk country music.
Hi, everyone. I'm David Byrd, and I'm here with Nikki Strong. We're talking country music. Let's start off, Nikki, with a couple of veterans of country music, Merle Haggard and Willie Nelson. They have a new album out called Django and Jimmy. Tell me a little bit about
that. So Django and Jimmy, the album is going to be released June 2nd. So, and it's in honor of their two respective heroes. So Django Reinhardt, who is considered one of the best guitar players in the world.
Right.
And one of Willie Nelson's biggest influences. And then you have Jimmy Rogers, which is country music's first superstar.
Right.
And pioneer of the genre itself.
And someone to whom Merle Haggard has credited his love for country music, for listening to his songs.
Yes, he actually did a whole album in tribute to him. So, and what's really good is that both Willie and Merle are good friends.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be good synergy. It's going to be good music. And they got together back in 1983 with Poncho and Lefty.
Sure.
Yes, so this is a long time coming. So
wow.
I'm looking forward to hearing what they have in store. They also, on the CD, have a tribute to Johnny Cash.
Now, I understand both were really good friends with Johnny Cash, and they all had their Johnny Cash stories, and so they sat down and wrote this tune about him.
Yes.
And Johnny Cash, of course, died a few years ago, so he's another pioneer of country music and of rock and roll, too.
Yeah. I love the fact that they're two legends in their own right, paying tribute to legends.
Now, they have a song on this album called It's All Going to Pot.
Yes, they do.
Smoking some weed in the studio, were they?
Of course. If it's Willie Nelson.
Okay. Well, now, see, most people associate country music with drinking.
Willie has been very forthcoming with it, and even with this song, you know, and the video. They're very much like, light it up and let's go for it. And I think in light of everything that's happening in terms of legalization of marijuana, they're like, hey, let's sing about it. What the heck?
There was a bit of sad news. There was a Tennessee man who was arrested after running over some people at a Trace Adkins concert. Now, apparently this fellow had a little bit to drink.
Yes.
He was a vendor.
Yes.
And got into a dispute with somebody and then decided to run over them.
Well, what was crazy, he got into a dispute and then he went back to his SUV to get a gun, actually. This is what witnesses are reporting. And then he got into his SUV and then drove it into a crowd of people who were, you know, hanging around after the concert.
Wow.
He went right into a field. And it took someone else driving their Jeep into him to stop.
Wow.
Yeah. So one person died.
He has been arrested. This fellow has been arrested and is facing some pretty serious charges.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Luke Bryan.
His
album Crash My Party had 6 number one singles on it. It earned him 2 Entertainer of the Year awards.
Yes.
He's got a new one out called Kill the Lights, and we've got the first tune from that.
Yes, the CD Kill the Lights is set to be released Friday, August 7th.
Mm.
And he is really on fire right now. He has a new exhibit at the Country Music Hall of Fame that opened last week, mm-hmm. highlighting his career. And he's kicking off the Kick Up the Dust Tour right now. So in honor of the tour and in honor of just some good country rocker music, this is Luke Bryan's latest.
All right, it's called Kick the Dust Up. And if you have any comments or questions, you can always log on to our website. That's www.voanews.com. That's where you can also find Nikki's show.
Yes.
And we welcome your comments. Thanks for listening.
Kick the dust up. Let's kick the dust up.
And this is also kicking some dust up. The Pentagon says a U.S. military laboratory in the western U.S. state of Utah accidentally sent live anthrax spores to civilian commercial labs in 9 states and a military lab in South Korea. A Pentagon spokesman reassured the American public there is no known risk and no suspected or confirmed cases of infections in lab workers. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control is investigating. Contact with live anthrax can lead to a severe flu-like illness that could be fatal if not treated. That's it for this edition of International Edition. You can access more news and information on our website at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington. Enjoy the day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Neglected tropical diseases, or NTDs, are chronic disabling illnesses that thrive in areas with poor sanitation, lack of clean drinking water, and scant access to medication. The World Health Organization has identified 17 of them as priorities for action. Some of them can be effectively treated and even eliminated with low-cost medications, in many cases donated by pharmaceutical companies. Getting these medications to where they are needed has been a daunting task, since these are diseases of the poorest of the poor. Their impact on individuals and communities can be devastating. NTDs impair intellectual development in children and reduce school enrollment. They limit the ability of infected individuals to work and thrive, thus trapping them in a cycle of poverty and disease. Today, over 1 billion people suffer from at least one NTD. In 2006, the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, started a program addressing the 7 diseases that comprise 80% of all NTDs: lymphatic filariasis, blinding trachoma, onchocerciasis, schistosomiasis, and the 3 most common infections, the soil-transmitted parasites hookworm, roundworm, and whipworm. Back then, the program had a budget of $15 million to distribute 36 million treatments to 16 million people in 4 countries, said USAID Assistant Administrator Ariel Pablos Mendez. Today, it's $100 million and 240 million treatments distributed to 115 million people in 31 countries. The program is very successful for 3 reasons. First is USAID's partnership with the pharmaceutical sector, which has to date contributed $8.8 billion worth of medication. Second is USAID's partnership and coordination with the government of the United Kingdom's Department for International Development, which has allowed for a collective reach to almost 50 countries and the provision of 340 million treatments in 2014. And third, USAID's cooperation with host governments and the ability to build upon the existing infrastructure of national disease control and elimination programs. The elimination of these diseases of extreme poverty as a public health scourge is within our grasp, said USAID Assistant Administrator Pablos Mendez. USAID is committed to working with countries and our global partners to reach the remaining 800 million people who still need treatment.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.